Okay, because it's very informal. You can always stop me at any time. Wow, this is very shiny, so I should avoid that. I'm going to talk about focus just on bipartite lattice. The title I said I'll also talk about the frustrated lattice, but I don't think I have time today. Let me say, I make it pedagogic. You can always stop me. So as time goes on, if I cannot finish, I just give a conclusion. Okay. So I will talk about both Harvard model and then super solid, the definition of super solid. Then this part, most of you probably already know. So I will also go through it. Both vortex duality. Then we talk about charge density wave super solid, valence bond super solid. Then compare with quantum Monte Carlo. There's some reference. So of course today I'm not going to talk about frustrated lattice. Frustrated lattice of course is very different than bipartite lattice. The physics is also very different, but I'm not going to talk about it because I will stay here 4 more weeks. We can always chat privately. Of course, Longhua Jiang is a very good student of mine, and these two postdocs in China did this quantum Monte Carlo. So this is a very familiar Hamiltonian with hopping of the bosons, and in on-site interaction, maybe longer long-range interactions, with also possible ring exchange interactions. So the application of this Bose-Hubbard model in condensed matter system is never not that clear. Fortunately, the connection is the most important application so far is on ultra-cold atoms, on optical lattice. In condensed matter, you can say it describes some absorption problem on substrates, but the connection is not very clean. But the very clean application is really on optical lattice. For example, there's a famous paper by Grenard to look at the superfluid to motor insulator transition in optical lattice. Of course, I can always be stopped, right? Yeah. Of course, there's at least three phases. Superfluid is boson off-diagonal non-range order. The boson hopping, the boson condense. And then, of course, you have charge density wave order in this density. And the super solid is both these two orders. So that's just from the order parameter. We can characterize at least three orders. Let me re just review this Bose-vortex duality. Actually, most of you probably already know, but there's maybe some atomic people, they are not that familiar. So because it's pedagogic, I have to go through this a little bit. It's well documented, but let me just explain the main idea of this Bose-vortex duality. Of course, this model was on-site interaction with this paper, and then cooling interaction was studied by myself also. The main idea is of Bose-vortex duality. Let me just focus on one boson per side. Okay, a commensurate filling, one boson per side. So look at my insulated side. The ground state is every side you take one boson. Now we can see what's the excitation. So I create the excitation. This has two bosons per side. Of course, you get the vacancy or hole. So you get the particle excitation and the hole excitation. Because the commensurate filling, the number of particle equal to the number of hole. So we get the action in terms of this water parameter. Of course, it's a relativistic field because it's equal number of particle and equal number of holes. And we can approach the superfluid. Suppose I look at the superfluid insulated transition. I can approach the critical point from the insulating side and write this non-wavelength, low-energy Ginzburg-Landau action in terms of this water parameter. So that's the well-known you have, for example, it's 2 + 1 dimension, two space and then time. So, of course, these order primes in insulating, it's not one, it's vanishing. And in superfluid, there's a Bose condensation. So that's a well-known Ginzburg-Landau action to describe the superfluid insulator transition from the insulating side. Of course, you can also describe the transition starting from the superfluid side. You have a critical point, the superfluid insulator transition. I can approach the critical point from the insulating side by looking at the excitation in the insulate. I can also approach the critical point from the superfluid side by looking at the excitation in the superfluid. So what's the excitation superfluid is also when we have phonon excitations, gapless mode. And that can be represented by a dual U1 gauge field. And of course, in superfluid, you also have vortices. So we can get the vortex to operate. So a vortex, then we can write this. Of course, a single vortex has an infinite energy. So the number of vortices equal to the number of anti-vortices. So we also get the relativistic field if we write the Ginzburg-Landau action in terms of the vortex to operate. Of course, it's coupled to this dual gauge field, because the dual gauge field stands for the gapless phonon modes. So we get the vortices coupled to a U1 gauge field with a Maxwell term. And if we approach the transition from the superfluid side in terms of this vortex order parameter, you can see in the superfluid is a vortex vacuum. However, in the insulating, vortex condense. So I can write this, I can approach the critical point either by the direct boson theory from the insulating side, or approach the critical point from the superfluid side by this vortex representation. So let me write this two action together. So in the boson picture, so we can write the action in terms of the boson operator. And this action is due to vortex excitation plus this dual gauge field. So I can write in boson representation or the vortex representation to describe this superfluid insulate transition. So in insulate, the boson not condensed. In superfluid, the boson condensed. That's in the boson picture. Yeah.
What does dual mean?
This dual means this is a boson operator, this is a vortex operator.
Does dual mean exactly equivalent?
In what sense? In terms of long range and the low energy physics, to describe the transition, they're completely equivalent. The short, they describe the same universality clause.
So these two actions are only equivalent at the critical point?
Near the critical point, in the long wavelength limit. It's a low energy effective theory. In this sense, they're completely equivalent. Of course, if you talk about short range, that may be different.
The boson action that you wrote down here,
yeah,
corresponds to the particle whose symmetric case where Z is 1.
Yeah.
Now, there's a particle asymmetric version where Z is 2.
Yeah, that case, I'm not.
That case, what would the dual action look like?
In that case, because here I'm going to focus on commensurate feeling. So I got this is a relativistic theory.
Yeah.
This is also a relativistic theory.
Yeah.
In that case, people also get a dual action.
What does it look like?
In that case, as worked out by people, let me.
But if it's not relevant to the rest of your talk.
We can talk about privately. That's in that case, you have a linear derivative term.
Yeah.
People also performed the duality transformation. Yeah. Okay, so now, so in the insulate, of course, in the superfluid is the vortex vacuum. and insulate vortex condense. So you can see that's why what we call is, you know, you can use either way to look at the phase transition. Depends on which way is convenient. So now let me the physics is in the Boltzmann representation. So what is a vortex? A vortex is, you know, if you create a vortex in the wave function, in the Boltzmann wave function, you go around this vortex, the phase, if you boson, if you go around the vortex, you pick up a phase 2 pi. We know that. That's the definition of vortex. If you go around the vortex, you pick up a phase 2 pi. So now, in the vortex representation, what is the boson? Then in the vortex representation, you can see, you can think of boson is a vortex in the vortex wave function. Du means always plus, minus minus equal to plus, or is something like that. So if you create a vortex in the vortex wave function, you get a boson. Okay, in the vortex representation. Then you, if you go around a boson, in the vortex language, if you go around the boson, then you pick up a phase 2 pi. Because boson in the vortex representation is a vortex in vortex. Yeah.
Is it valid for integer filling? Because generally I would expect the vortex picks up the phase times the filling factor of the bosons.
Can you say it again?
I would expect that the vortex picks up the phase proportional to the filling factor.
Oh, exactly. That's you.
Integer filling.
Yeah, exactly. That's the this sentence. You are perfect right. I take one boson, suppose.
Okay.
Integer filling, exactly. You get you said that point. So if I take one boson, let me just focus on one boson. If a vortex in the vortex representation, boson plays like a role like a vortex because boson is a vortex in vortex representation. So if you go around the boson, the vortex pick up a phase 2 pi when it encircles the boson. So that's exactly what you said. Then in the vortex representation, the strength of the dual magnetic field and the vortex field equal to the boson density. Then for integer filling, if just one boson, you pick up 2 pi. That's not a big deal. But suppose the boson is not integer filling. It's a filling factor F. Then if you go through a plaquette, a dual plaquette, then it pick up the dual magnetic field is proportional to boson density. Okay, so that's the simple picture of boson vortex duality. So the point is in the vortex picture, the boson plays a role like a magnetic field. So if it goes through a boson, you pick up a phase 2 pi. Of course, for F equal to 1, this is not this is probably trivial because F equal to 1, one side you have one boson. So you go through a boson, you pick up a phase 2 pi. 2 pi is trivial. But suppose the density.
Can we just go back to the.
Yeah. Yeah.
This statement that the average effective magnetic field seen by the vortex is equal to density.
Yeah.
This is independent of interaction between
bosons. Independent of interaction. It's completely topological phase.
So even you have quantum decretion on these things, the effective field seen by the vortex still have total density.
Exactly. This is an exact statement. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, now, so of course this paper by Balanci et al, they look at this problem. Bosons at the filling factor, if F equal to 1, you know, so it becomes trivial, but when if F is a incommensurate filling, as you said, or no, it's P over Q, it's not equal to 1, then they can map this boson at the filling factor, hopping on a direct lattice, is due to vortices hopping on the dual lattice. I'll explain what the dual lattice soon, okay. Subject to a fluctuating magnetic field, but the average strength is equal to the boson density per dual plaquette. So that's come from the previous transparency. Okay, so boson if a definite factor P over Q is due to vortices and due lattice subject to a due magnetic field. This average strength equal to boson density. So that's the only point, you know, we need to remember about this duality. So of course, in the due language, so this problem is a well-known problem called a Hofstadt problem of electrons moving in a lattice in the presence of magnetic field is F flux quantum per plaquette. So of course the spectrum is well known. This spectrum was worked out by magnetic space group, and the magnetic space group, for example, for Q, then magnetic space group detect their Q-fold minimum. The form of Q-dimensional representation of a magnetic space group. Then we can write the effective theory in terms of these Q vortices, their Q minimum. So of course, when F equal to 1, then Q equal to 1. So that's why you only get one vortex minimum. So the point is, if you suppose we look at the half filling, then you have two vortices. So you have to write the effective action in the vortices in terms of two vortices. So that's the major difference of F not equal to 1. For F equal to 1, you only need one kind of vortices. For P over Q, you need Q kinds of vortices.
I mean, this already tells you what you should do in the case that there is no particle symmetry.
Oh, that's not exactly the same, because what Kunyang asked is, this is still commensurate defeating. Maybe Kunyang is, suppose I'm slightly away from feeding, you get the linear derivative. But I will mention that, because that's what I'm going to talk.
So you want to think about, say, inconventional?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what I'm going to talk.
Magnetic space group?
Give me one more. I'll go to the next transparency. I make this claim, then I will explain this, answer this question. Okay. Anyway, I would like to say this is a nice paper, but my personal opinion, there are two problems with two shortcomings in this, I call the dual vortex method by these people. First of all,
what is DVM?
It's called the dual vortex method. Dual vortex method. Okay. So now, the problem is, there's one problem is this method cannot be applied to the charge density wave side, because they assuming, you know, when they go to the vortex picture, they're assuming the average magnetic field is equal to the boson density. That already assuming if the charge density wave side, that's already assuming boson is uniform, because the strength of the dual magnetic field equal to the boson density. If the boson is uniform, that's a good start point. However, in the charge density wave side, as we know, the boson density maybe takes some checkboard or stripe order. It's too simplest case. In this case, the dual gauge field, because equal to the boson density, the dual gauge field cannot be taken as uniform. So in principle, that the method needs to be modified in the charge density wave side.
But that description, though, can predict at which wave vector there will be a charge density wave instability.
In principle, but I have some doubt on that. But this is much more serious. Okay, if you approach the charge density wave, if you write the effective action assuming the dual gauge field is uniform, for example, then you approach the charge density wave side. That's probably also has some problem, I think. But here the problem is more serious. Suppose I'm way inside the charge density wave side, and then I look at the incommensurate feeding. Then this is much more serious, this problem. That way I'm still has some doubt.
But in order to do that, don't don't you have to sort of guess what kind of charge density state you will end up with? Otherwise,
exactly, yeah.
You cannot possibly, you know.
Yeah. We will be clear on this point. Yeah. So I point out, you know, where inside the charge density wave, suppose you want to look at the phase transitions, you have to choose a different set point. Because inside the charge density wave, the boson already had take some charge density wave order. Then because it plays a role like a dual gauge field, the dual gauge field is now uniform already. So this point you need to be careful. That's another thing is, they probably already know is, you know, the bandwidth, my student and I did some calculation, the bandwidth decay exponentially with Q. So if Q goes too large, of Q equal to 1 is okay. Q equal to 2 is also okay. But if you take Q too large, you know, the bandwidth of the dual vortex field is very, very narrow. Then it's actually decay exponentially. So when Q equal to very large, you can see how small it is. So this method is really not useful.
This is using the eigenfunctions of Hochstadt the problem. That
yeah. That's suppose forget about the interaction wave before you add the interaction.
It's a wave function overlay.
You know, so of course, both are interact with each other with the interaction. So far, I'm not talking about the interaction of vortices. I just look at the kinetic term.
So the vortex band structure. Then this thing comes up from some kind of overlap integral of Wannier functions of vortices.
Yeah. You can do this exactly. Just calculate the there are Q bands.
I think it's actually simpler than that. I mean, when Q gets large, basically it goes to a continuum limit. These are just lambda levels.
That's correct. Because it becomes flat.
Yeah.
What you say?
Yeah.
But it grows to the flat band exponentially fast.
What is C?
C is an order of 1. We calculate C for different light, depends on the lattice structure. Square, honeycomb, all depends on lattice structure. It's 1 to 20. It's about, we can calculate for different lattices. So anyway, I disagree with their way to apply this, put the Q equal to 16 and the 32. And anyway.
Yeah, smaller numbers there. 1632 is a given number. Of course, you can think about.
Because their motivation is try to understand this charge density wave.
For the large.
In superconductor. They did this paper. Anyway, now the water is here, so I can be a little bit more free. Yeah. So their motivation is I like the formalism. You know, that's my personal. Many people even don't like the formalism. Some people say, why I wanted to do this duality? It's making simple things more complicated. People don't like that. But I like the formalism, but I just don't like my personal opinion, I don't like that application. They did this, and then they know when Q goes to very large, you simply don't trust this method anymore. Because the bandwidth is so narrow, then you put the interaction. You do perturbation theory, that bandwidth is in the denominator. The denominator goes to zero, you cannot trust this kind of side point anymore. So
you cannot do the perturbation theory.
So anyway, I like that section about the magnetic space group. Then there are many more sections about application to superconductor. I reserve my opinion on that. So of course I take a different route, as you mentioned. I take a Q equal to 2, but it's probably also related to Quinyan's. I know how to answer Quinyan's problem now. Yeah, I already. So if I take a Q equal to 2, it's essentially similar to Quinyan's problem. I take a Q equal to 2, okay, that's the smallest you can get to 1. For 1, it works very well. For Q equal to 16, forget about it. Look at this. You know, Q is not too bad, okay? If C is an order of 1, it works. But I'm moving slightly away from conventional feeding. So to Quinyan's question, I need to answer now. For F equal to 1, people did the duality. So what's the effect is, in the Maxwell term, they add the external magnetic field. Yeah. So here it's very similar. So people did duality for f equal to 1. Then if slightly away from conventional defining, in the Boson picture, you get the linear derivative term, get z equal to 2. In the dual picture, it corresponds to your other external magnetic field.
And that changes z from 1 to 2 as well.
Exactly.
Well, basically, chemical potential translates into
magnetic field. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The general question is that,
yeah.
I just want to understand the
yeah.
validity of this duality picture.
Yeah.
So, we all know that outside the superconducting phase, the vorticity are not conserved. Cannot conserve. So that's why the vortex is long lived. It's not well defined. I mean, it's an experimental fact that we believe.
Vortex
is a
long-lived
object. It's not something
well defined
boson.
Yeah. For example, for type 2 superconductor. Okay. For type 1, boson do this vortex is never useful for type 1 superconductor. I've mentioned that because type 1 superconductor you don't even have vortices.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Type 2, then what is this? I think this picture is, because it's a real quantity.
If you don't have rigidity, for instance, how do you conserve the vorticity? These two come together
in the
standard.
Oh, the vorticity is, here the vorticity is an equal number, the vortex equal to the, they're not conserved, but the number of vortices is always equal to the number of anti-vortices. They're generated by quantum fluctuation. Suppose at zero temperature. Vorticity is not conserved, but it's like the Bohr number here, the excitation is also not conserved. The particle excitation equal to the whole excitation. They come in pairs, but it's a relativistic theory at the conventional defining. The vortices are always equal to the number of anti-vortices. Maybe...
Actually, the normal phase, the vortex actually condenses.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a condenser, so it's not, you're right, it's not yeah. So it's condensate.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the meaning of creating one vortex if it has only found a lifetime?
No, in the superconducting, in the superfluid state, of course, it's very defined.
Yeah, yeah, in the insulating side.
Yeah, but then in the insulating side,
so
you have a vortex condensate. So in that sense, single vortex degree of freedom is not very defined. It's like when you go to superfluid, then of course, single boson is not.
The usual condensate of other atoms, I mean, usually, boson is well defined.
Yeah.
But in this picture, just a very naive question.
Yeah.
The vortex is condensed.
Yeah.
And one would say there should be finite temperature transition. Why is then the mold insulator just a zero temperature transition?
You mean at the finite temperature, of course, in the superfluid side, depends on the dimension.
No, on the mod insulating side. The mod insulator is just present at zero temperature.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, finite temperature. Now, if we say that the voltage is condensed, then it would say there should be both the Einstein condensation, which would predict the finite temperature transition.
No. I know your problem. I thought about this problem. What the answer is,
then you can create a net. Number is not conserved. So
okay, so that's.
You know, the point is, on the insulating side, the vortex condense. Then you still have a gap. You know, because the vortex condense, the gauge field acquire mass. But that's why different than this is different than the superfluid side. Superfluid side you have it's a gapless system. You know, because boson condense, then you get a Gaudster mode. Okay, if you go to the finite temperature, physically, you in 2+1 you get a KT transition. Okay, now in the insulating side, even if you look at vortex pictures, vortex condense, but there's a gauge field. The dual gauge field acquire mass. You get a gap. Your system has a gap. because that's why in the vortex, in the Bose picture, you know the insulator has a gap. So if you apply temperature, you don't get the phase transition. Now, you can also understand it from vortex picture. Vortex condense, then the dual gauge field acquire gap. So system still has a gap.
So it's incompressible condensate?
The system is incompressible. More insulator is incompressible. Yeah, in the vortex picture, you have a vortex condensate.
Okay,
but the gap can be explained by Maxwell, by Higgs mechanism. Okay, so I will take a, you know, these people go to Q very large. I stayed at the Q. I take a transverse direction. So slightly away from Q equal to 2. Okay, because I know going into that direction, the method just don't, is not useful anymore. So I do transverse direction.
What do you mean by transverse direction?
I change chemical potential instead. Oh no, it doesn't matter. I just stay Q and then make Q slightly away from Q equal to 2. Look at the incommensurate case.
So you're, okay.
Slightly away from Q equal to 2. And also, I will look at the more carefully on the dual vortex method in the charge density wave side, because I need to be more careful about the side point of the dual gauge field. So I need to answer Kayin's question. Let me look at the Hanekamp lattice. Okay, Hanekamp lattice is real. This Hanekamp lattice, the dual lattice, you just pick the center point. That's the definition of the dual lattice. Okay, so it's the dual lattice, the triangular lattice. So the boson hopping on the Hanekamp lattice is due to vortices hopping on the triangular lattice. So subject to a magnetic field, average strength equal to the boson density. For example, the vortices are hopping, for example, on this triangle. It encloses one real lattice side. So on the average, suppose is boson density, the average boson density plays a role like a magnetic field for the vortices. So that's the picture, okay. So if you go through a triangle, you pick up a phase, which is equal to the boson density. If boson equal to one, you don't care about it too much, because goes through a loop, you pick up phase 2 pi. 2 pi is okay, you know. 2 pi is nothing. But if you have 1/2 boson density, you go through, you pick up a phase pi. And then pi do some damage, or do some physics. So, okay, so if we go to the vortices, go to the vortex picture, then the Hamiltonian of the vortices, I can write the kinetic term. In the boson hopping on the triangular lattice, okay, the dual lattice. You need to be careful of this, the phase factor, okay, to take care. If, for example, for general feeling, to take care of, if you go through a loop, a triangle, you pick up a phase 2 pi f. So that's only this phase factor, take care of this phase factor. Of course, there are interaction terms. Interaction term, the symmetry of the Hamiltonian is completely determined by the magnetic space group. Let me just, of the kinetic term. That's what I mean by magnetic space group. The interaction is outside the interaction. It does not involve hopping. You know, it's just density interaction. It's gauge. It has nothing to do with the phase, the interaction term. So if you understand the symmetry of the Hamiltonian, focus on the kinetic term, that's the symmetry of the whole Hamiltonian, because the interaction does not have this phase factor. So magnetic space group is, of course, these people worked it out for square lattice. So the extension to triangular, to Hanekamp lattice is, it's just some technical stuff. There's no new ideas. Okay, so they did this, they wrote that paper, 35-page paper. Subir always writes 35-page papers. Okay, yeah.
Well, you used to do that too.
No, that's he did it. I just do some small parts. Yeah.
We not put it on the right.
Yeah, right. But I think the most important section is section 2. Yeah, okay. So now we look at the two point group. Anyway, it's very informal, so it's, so anyway, he will not hear it anyway. So the point group, of course, you don't worry about this. The point group of triangular lattice C6V has two generators, one rotation around, because 3 over pi over 3, rotation and then the reflection operate. So of course, the whole group has two translations. So magnetic space group is, if f equal to 1, it's just the usual translational group. Magnetic means there's a phase factor. That's what it means. If you write the operator which commutes with the Hamiltonian, you have to be translational operator, you have to put the phase factor. Only in this way you can commute with the Hamiltonian, because Hamiltonian has this kinetic term. Of course, f equal to 1, you don't worry about it. That's why if you look at f equal to 1, the translational group, f, you go through a loop, you pick up phase 2 pi, you forget about it. So it's the same thing as the usual space group. Magnetic space group means you have this phase factor, and you have to be careful. 1 and 2, they don't commute when f not equal to 1. So omega equal to 2 pi, no, this is EI 2 pi f. Okay, this should be EI 2 pi f. So you can write this two translation notation, and also write this reflection operator. K is complex conjugate. So reflection is always non-unitary. So you can forget about this. I'm just answer Kane's question. That's the generator of a magnetic space group. For different lattices, you should write it down for different lattices.
What is T sub
D? TD is just, you know, this is one translation, 1, 2, this is diagonal. It's not independent. Of course, you can also write direct lattice, that's on dual lattice. You can also write direct on direct lattice also. Let me go through, but you just be careful of this phase factor. Take some time to overcome the phase factor. But let me focus on cube 2, because that's the simplest case, is the most useful case. It's also the smallest case. As I said, if you go to larger, you don't trust the method too much. Cube 2, I just solved the kinetic term, Hamiltonian, be careful of the phase factor. Cube 2 means on the average, on every side you have one half, on average, one half boson. So you go around and pick up a phase pi. Just taking care of this phase. You get the diagonal, the kinetic term, you get this Hamiltonian. Again, of course, you have two minimum, because in general, if you have 1 over 2 filling factor, you get 2 vertex minimum. If f equal to 1, you get 1 vertex minimum. 2, you get 2 minimum. So that's a major difference. You know, incommensurate 1 over 2 different from integer filling. You get 2 vertex minimum. So we call this angle mode the plus minus. Now we can add the interactions, because the symmetry is dictated by the kinetic term. So we can look at how this transform under this magnetic space group. Then if we add the interaction, the symmetry is exact. Okay, we're not changed by the action. The symmetry is completely dictated by the magnetic space group symmetry. So now the quadratic term, of course, is very familiar. The only difference is very similar to f equal to 1. The only difference is you have 2 vertices plus minus. Okay, so you get the scalar electrodynamics coupled to a gauge field. Of course, you can go higher order. For different lattices, you can work out quadratic order. For Hanekamp lattice, that's actually for Hanekamp up to this level is the same as the square lattice. So now it's related to Kun Yang's question and your question. I slightly away from one half. So answer Kun Yang's question in this case is, in fact, slightly away one half means the boson density, you know, is one half, a little bit more, a little bit less. Then that's because we know boson density plays a role like a dual magnet, the strength of magnetic field. So that means it corresponds to the kinetic term are at the external magnetic field, which is proportional to the deviation from the commensurate field. So if you put this equal to zero, it's a commensurate field. Now, if I slightly away from one half field, corresponds to at this term. So that also happens, works for f equal to 1. So of course, I look at this. Actually, this only works in principle. Later, I will explain only works in superfluid and the valence bond side. Okay, but if you go well inside the charge density wave side, it breaks down. Because I did this action assuming the dual magnetic field is uniform. That's the side point. I work out of the magnetic space group by assuming the dual magnetic field is uniform. So I go to this action. Of course, you need to be careful to apply this action well inside the charge density wave side. How many minutes I have? Because I started 5 minutes late. So only in the f equal to 1, everybody is familiar. So only difference is that I have two vertices. Okay, of course, that's make the charge density wave possible. You know, multi-insulate is a featureless state. It does not break translational symmetry of the lattice if f equal to 1. If f equal to 1 half, then you can break lattice symmetry. So that's the major difference for 1 half with longer range interaction, different than f equal to 1 with only on-site interaction. So you can see this action looks very similar. You have two vertices. That's the only difference. The only thing you need to remember, you have two kinds of vertices, and then that's all. That's the only difference than f equal to 1. Of course, the superfluid side, the vertices is a vacuum of vertices. In the insulating side, the vortex condense. And of course, you can look at the two limits. Depends on the gamma 1. If it's positive, then it favors IC limit, one of the non-vanishing. And if it's negative, then you can see they favor the equal magnitude. So that's why I call the IC limit. They call the IC limit and square is the plane limit for square lattice. It's similar for handicap lattice. So let me look at the charge density wave side, IC limit, then only one vortices can condense. So we can work out the water parameter. Of course, I can still approach the charge density wave side by looking at the symmetry breaking from the superfluid side. But if well inside the charge density wave, suppose I take a checkerboard pattern or even stripe order. So we know then, suppose the boson take this charge density wave side, I want to look at what happened. Suppose I have a charge density wave. Now, way inside the charge density wave side, I want to look at the chemical potential, this axis. Fix the charge density wave side, I look at the chemical potential slightly away from 1/2. What will happen? That's what I'm going to do. Okay. Now fixed in the charge density wave side, then we know the dual gauge field take also checkerboard pattern, the average. So in this case, let me give you this phase diagram first. You know, if mu chemical potential take zero, I have a superfluid charge density wave transition. Okay. So that's described by f equal to 1/2. So what I'm going to do now is fix on this side, away from this critical point, and look at at the chemical potential. And this I call this transverse direction. This is a longitudinal direction. I want to look at what happened in this case. Okay, this dashed line. So in this case, I have to take a different way inside. So where inside the charge density wave side, I take a different side point. because the dual gauge field has to correspond to the density distribution. Then in this case, I need to redo the magnetic space group, and not a uniform dual gauge field. Now it's a staggered dual gauge field. In this case, you can see there's only one vortex minimum, way inside the charge density wave side. So again, in this case, you get only one vortex minimum. So if you get this effective action, you get only one minimum coupled to a dual gauge field. So way inside the charge density wave side, we map to a Q equal to 1. Q equal to 1 case. Q equal to 2 is very complicated. Okay, I will mention a little bit. Q equal to 1 is very established. So what I mean is the whole action, actually, if you want to describe the full the phase diagram, have two minimums. But where inside the charge density wave side, actually, because of the dual distribution of the stacked form of dual gauge field, you only get one minimum. So map to Q equal to 1. So that's the main point. On charge density wave side, I can still map to Q equal to 1. So Q equal to 1 phase diagram is well known. Q equal to 2, I will mention a little bit, very complicated, and I think it is resolved by numerical. I will mention a little bit. So Q equal to 1 phase diagram is nothing but the type 2 superconductor in magnetic field. So even this phase diagram I just mentioned, so in principle, it's much now what is this in external magnetic field. Okay, the deviation from 1/2 plays a role like an external magnetic field. Okay, so this is a magnetic, this is a phase diagram for type 2. So in principle, this is not right. Okay, HC1, HC2, both first order transition. But in principle, there's always a vortex liquid. Re-entering the vortex liquid, in principle, that's from the duality transformation. There's always, in principle, if you expand this, there's always a vortex liquid. So it's a second order transition and a first order transition. This first order transition is always split into a second order transition, the first order transition, then first order transition. So it's a vortex liquid. This vortex lattice, all these vortices are real stuff, okay, for type 2. Vortices are real stuff for type 2. It also works in normal state. There's a vortex liquid, they're made, but somehow the vortices, even in normal state, they have a high dissipation, but it's still a physical degree of freedom for type 2 superconductor. So they're always re-entering. So this conclusion actually comes from duality, which I don't want to, I already said that. So I mapped this to Q equal to 1. The Q equal to 1 phase diagram is well known. So what I mean is I got this phase diagram. Okay. So
in a sense that did you assume that you have a staggered pattern?
Yeah, charge density, I'm already assuming that's a charge density wave side.
You need a microscopic Hamiltonian, depending on how you
use exactly.
V1 and V2,
exactly.
The endo is staggered to the stripes. And
exactly. So the weakness of this effective theory is they don't know which state is stable. Yeah. So that's why it has to combine with quantum Monte Carlo. So far, you can see the whole approach is a symmetry-based approach. I can only classify this state if this state is stable. Then I add slightly away what will happen. So this state stable or not, I know this phase is certainly possible. And then look at the phenomenology. Look at what will happen. And then if you want to look at this state is really stable or not, I have to go to microscopic Hamiltonian. Both Harvard model, look at the quantum Monte Carlo. So I will compare with it. I'm not going to talk because I don't do quantum. I'm going to compare with. Yeah. So the phase diagram is charge density wave becomes charge density wave super solid. Okay, no. Yeah, so the phase diagram is charge density of supersolid. If further away, then because I want to just map to Q equal to 1 model. Q equal to 1, we know there's a window, and then Maslow phase, vortex liquid, and then vortex lattice. So just map to, use that phase diagram, map to charge density wave corresponds to Maslow phase. Density the supersolid corresponds to vortex liquid phase, and then there's vortex lattice phase. Of course, you can compare. This is a second order transition. Sinai is a second order transition. This is a first order transition. So F equal to 1 phase diagram is no. For unsighted interaction, it's multi-insulate, and there's a superfluid re-entrant. But here is a supersolid, and there must be a phase transition between superfluid and the supersolid. So that's F equal to 1 over 2, different from 1, integer feeding. The phase diagram, that's the difference. So for F equal to 1, you never get a supersolid. Okay? You only have two phases, superfluid and multi-insulator. Here, at least have four phases, superfluid, charge density wave, supersolid, and the incommensurate charge density wave. Yeah.
Is this phase diagram just based on whatever the classical phase diagram you show in 3D?
I just based on this phase diagram. Because it's mapped to Q equal to 1. It's I mapped to 2 equal 1 case. Q equal to 1 phase diagram is well established. So this magnetic field, external magnetic field, plays a role like the deviation from 1 half. And this plays the role like a quantum fluctuations. So this vertical, if you put U equal to 0, that's the commensurate case. So you have superfluid to charge density wave transition. That must be a first order, in IC limit. And then I'm not focused on that phase transition. I'm focused on this transverse direction. At the chemical potential, then I take that Q equal to 1 case phase diagram map to this case. So I need a little bit more explanation. Is maybe I need, I can stop at 11:15. Is that okay?
By S5, it doesn't interfere with
Kunyang's. So. Yeah. So I'm definitely, I stop at 11:10. So in the charge density wave side, because I only have one vertex, it's not condensed, so the gauge field is massive. It's a gap phase. You have a gap. In the charge density super solid phase, it condenses. Then this is a gapless mode, because that's why I know it's super solid. Because it has charge density wave order. Also has superfluid mode. This is by this dual gauge field. It must be a supersolid. So the transition, the first transition, of course, is worked out in multi-insulate Z equal to 2. And the superfluid density scales like linear with a logarithmic correction. So that's a prediction.
Are you in 2-dimensional or 3-dimensional?
2+1 dimension. Because the triangular lattice was a 2+1 dimension. Okay, so what I mean is this is the second order transition. That's well known universality class. This is the first order transition. The rest of them are first order transition. Okay. For Hanekamp lattice, the similar diagram in IC limit work for square lattice too. So Feizhou asked this quantum Monte Carlo. So we can compare with quantum Monte Carlo. As Kain said, when you compare, so you have to look the quantum Monte Carlo. People forget about this effective dual gauge theory. They don't care. But the
They do care.
Okay. yeah, that's very nice. I'm sorry. They do care. They can compare, right? Because dual gauge theory that works long distance, long wavelength effective theory, and look at the if a phase stable, they look at the universality class and exponent. So it's a complementary approach. Monte Carlo, they did the microscopic model, just Bose-Hubbard model, hardcore case means U equal to infinity, V1 positive. So they get this phase diagram. It turns out superfluid, supersolid, solid. They supersolid, they look at the stability. It's unstable for this case. So I think this corresponds to type 1. type 1 superconductor don't even have vertices. So forget, however, if you add longer range interaction, then they get a super solid phase, stable phase. Okay, they find this behavior. But of course, what if I compare with my effective theory, I can look at this. Because this is a solid and a super solid, of course, that incommensurate is not stable, except you had very long range interaction. So it's a first order transition. Here is a second order transition. And the superfluid density, I would like to say there's a logarithmic correction, which my student is calculating. And of course, numerically, it's very hard to see that. But of course, for the soft core case, the dual theory doesn't care hard core or soft core, as long as they do work on both cases. The macroscopic, they care. Macroscopic, then these people showed this is strap super solid. There's always a super solid here, it's a pi super solid. So what I mean, this is a second order transition. And with that, you will start the class.
So this is all on triangular lattice?
This is on square lattice. Because that what I'm doing is handicap lattice. Triangular lattice, I'm not going to talk about. That's a frustrated lattice. That's a different case. And the handicap lattice, I will show a little bit. Yeah, maybe I show handicap lattice now. Yeah, handicap lattice is this two young postdoc did. So for soft core case, you get a charge density wave, one half feeding, then you get a super solid, there's a second order transition, and then you go to another phase. Of course, you're too far away, you get the charge density wave too. So there's a first order transition, from superfluid to super solid is a first order transition here. That's the only second order transition. So that's for Hanekamp lattice. Square lattice was done well before, maybe in 2000.
Can you go back to the square lattice?
Yeah.
I think there was a debate about the instability of super solid towards the
Yeah, that was removed. For hard core, it's unstable. If you, for soft core, these people show the super solid is stable in this slightly away. So that debate was resolved. At the beginning, they think it's stable. Then they look at the compressibility, calculate, find it's negative. But if you relax the hard core condition, so all this stability, my theory cannot talk about it. This dual gauge theory, unfortunately. But the Monte Carlo can do this energetics. Look at the.
So for the hard core with low range interaction, you think the super solid will be stabilized?
But it's a different super, it's pi, it's stripe order. It's not, this is a checkboard pattern. This is a stripe.
But it's a stripe with coexisting.
Yeah, it's a super solid. Strap is just the superfluid density is anisotropic. Okay. Now let me look at the IC limit would be very quick. Okay, the EC limit I just go through. In this case, you have to condense two vertices at the same time, so the density remains uniform, but the bound, the symmetry breaking is not due to density but due to bound. The kinetic term, the boson kinetic term, the hopping back and forth between two sides. In this case, this guy take a symmetry breaking pattern. The density remains uniform. That's why if you're assuming the dual gauge field is uniform, it works on both superfluid and valence bound side. Because both sides is uniform. The density is uniform, but the valence bound, the symmetry breaking is not due to density, but due to the kinetic term. Okay, now I have to go to six order terms. I should finish it very soon. Okay. So I got this term, 3 theta, of course, because of this symmetry, pi over the dual lattice is pi over 3, you get 3 theta. Different sign, you get this valence bound order. So one bound is stronger than the other bound. But the density is the same. The symmetry breaking is due to the kinetic term. That's why it's called valence bound order. So that's all commercially defined. But so far there's no numericals to find this state because this postdocs are doing this ring exchange term. But it's a very hard problem to stabilize. How to stabilize, field theory cannot say. They just say if you have ring exchange, it suggests this state can be more stable than charge density wave state. So now, where inside the charge density wave, that's what I'm looking at. If it's a charge density wave, and look at what happened in the chemical potential, transverse direction. So my conclusion is a valence bound supersolid, which was first proposed in this paper. So again, in this case, slightly away from 1/2 filling. So where inside the valence bound state, because that the lambda is really when they looked at these two faces of these two vertices. For Q equal to 2, I will mention very quickly, it's very hard to, it's a very difficult problem. But for Q equal to 1, it's well known. So again, I stay away from the critical point. I can say map to Q equal to 1, because lambda is ready when they look at the two faces. For example, lambda positive, so because they look at the two faces, 2 becomes 1. Again, here is not the charge, it should be valence bound. Okay. Again, the map to Q equal to 1. The reason is you stay in the valence bound side and the lambda is relevant, then it locks the two faces, so Q equal to 2 map to Q equal to 1. Therefore, I can take advantage of the Q equal to 1 phase diagram and get this phase diagram. So in the valence bound solid, of course, they're condensed. AU is massive, the gauge field is massive. But in the supersolid, they are not condensed. So you get the gapless mode. So this guy has the same valence bound order and also has a superfluid mode. It has to be a supersolid. So I got a very similar phase diagram. Here, of course, all these are first order transition. So it's a valence bound supersolid. So this supersolid has superfluid water and also has a density a translational symmetry breaking is a valence bound, not the density wave order. Square lattice are mentioned a little bit. There's a Hanekamp lattice. In square lattice, of course, is cosine 4 theta. That's easy to understand because you rotate pi over 2 instead of pi over 3. You get cosine. So this center people argued there's a deconfined quantum critical point. What they argue is, okay, at commercially defeating, superfluid to this, they, for X1 model, just X1 model, okay, with cosine 4 theta is irrelevant. Monte Carlo showed that. Analytically, it's very hard to do. So because of this, they claim it's a second order transition. But that's for Q equal to 2, okay. Q equal to 2, these people did it. Q equal to 1, duality was done by many people, high energy people, and then Das Gupta and happening. But the people, some people don't believe field theory. Q equal to 1, you do duality, looks like a second order transition. But you have to confirm by Monte Carlo. They did Monte Carlo. Many people did Monte Carlo for Q equal to 1. Perfectly match field theory. Then, if you look at the problem from both field theory and the Monte Carlo, you get the same answer. You are sure you get the right answer. For Q equal to 2, okay, for Q equal to 2, these people motivated by Santos' claim did Monte Carlo, okay. They found it's a weakly first order. And I believe the numerical evidence is very strong. They did Monte Carlo for many. So what I mean for square lattice, the problem is it's not this term is relevant or irrelevant. Even without this term, Q equal to 2 complex scalar coupled to a U1 gauge field is a weakly first order transition. I think this conclusion is firm. For Q equal to 1, because of duality and Monte Carlo, all find the second order transition. You can use that. For Q equal to 2, so this is actually, for this model, it's not a second order transition, okay? So it has nothing to do with this irrelevant or relevant or not. So, but what I'm doing is I don't care about this point because I'm way away from this point and look at the transverse direction. So even this first order transition does not change this conclusion, okay, by chemical potential. This is a second order transition. So fortunately, people need to, this paper I fear resolve the Q equal to 2 scalar capital U1 gauge field. Q equal to 1 is established. Q equal to 2, I also think is established. It's a first order transition. Okay, so.
Is your VBS different from CDW?
Yeah, the difference is VBS does not bring. The density is uniform. The only thing is the kinetic. Do I have that diagram? The VBS is the density is still, for example, at 1/2. Or average density is 1/2. Only this bond, the kinetic energy is stronger than this. So it's a valence bond solid.
The kinetic energy is modular.
Yeah. Okay, so of course there are many more there are many more implications for quantum Monte Carlo, and then field theory has to be complemented to quantum Monte Carlo, a microscopic model. There are some predictions which I don't have time to go through. Anyway, so I got this conclusion. When my part of universality class of solid to super solid, a new kind of super solid, which does not have analog. For example, in helium 4, it's a valence bond super solid implication for quantum Monte Carlo. Of course, this should be related to optical lattice. That's why I'm very interested to come to this workshop, because I have to make a connection with the organized. It's optical lattice. Now, of course, I also, because I'm also working on super solid in helium 4, I think they're related but very different. And this is completely a mess. You know, this. I also do phenomenology, but many quantum Monte Carlo people passing the quantum Monte Carlo for this problem. It's a much harder problem. Okay, this lattice model is simpler, and then field theory and Monte Carlo seems converge, so people are happy. If you two different methods, then you are okay. But if you get a different experiment is messy and then theory is messy, so they disagree with each other. Experiment also disagree, but. That's the focus of this talk is optical lattice. Okay, thanks. So 11, 11, 11. 5 triple 1, 5 number 1. Thanks.
So if you have non-white
lattice. Yeah, frustrated lattice. Yeah, we can talk. Yeah, that was your question.
Yeah, then
there's some trick. Yeah.
Yeah, you can use this straightforward.
Yeah, but that vortex minimum is different. Yeah, we can talk about it. I had a paper, some preliminary results on triangular and the cargo lattice. Yeah.
So, if you said that there are one vortex in equal two case, if there is a super solid order, right?
You mean, what I mean is, in principle, you have two vortices, but if I focus, if I stay away from the critical point, on charge density wave side or on valence bond solid side, I can always map to Q equal to 1.
So let's stay in the superfluid phase.
A superfluid is always stable.
Yeah,
superfluid is stable against the chemical potential change.
Yeah, so
you know, superfluid don't care about this.
Yeah, so in my term, I meant both superfluid phase and super solid phase. So suppose I have superfluid order, and imagine turning on this super solid order continuously. And then my question is, how is your effective theory modified? I mean, in one side you have one low energy vortices, and the other side you have two low energy vortices.
Oh, this must be, you know, in hand coupled, it must be a first order transition. You know, so this has to be a super fluid side, and the super solid has to be a first order transition. You know.
Your result implies that has to be first order.
Yeah, it has to be first order. Of course, if you ask Santo, the square lattice, but I think they already know it's a first order. They didn't say it in this, because this is informal, okay? In that last conference, I know they know this is a first order. They didn't spell it out.
No, but that statement depends on your Hamiltonian, but I'm focusing on the state itself.
You know.
So I can just imagine continuously turning on this super solid order in the super fluid phase.
This is which transition you are talking about? your superfluid to supersolid? Or,
yeah.
Oh, that's, in any case, it has to be, it may be weakly first order. In principle, it must be a first order transition, because it involves this lattice symmetry breaking. Of course, that doesn't mean this is a first order transition. Doesn't mean there is no macroscopic model which can have second order transition. That doesn't mean that. But in this particularly effective theory with Q equal to 2 is a first order. Of course, people continue to search. That's possible. You know, it's still possible. You can construct a macroscopic model which has second order transition from two different orders, for superfluid order to some translational symmetry breaking phase, second order deconfined quantum quickly point. That's possible, but not realized yet. That's what I'm saying.
I think we should stop.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.